From Illinois Public Media, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and it's Friday. We're almost at the end of the work week, and that means it's time for our weekly news roundups. We begin today with what's been making news in two cities in central Illinois, Springfield and Galesburg. Sean Crawford is news editor at our partner station, NPR Illinois, WUIS-FM in Springfield. Sean, welcome back to the show. Thanks for making time to be with us.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
And Jane Carlson is a reporter with Tri-States Public Radio, whose stations include WIUM-FM in Macomb. Jane, welcome back. Good to talk with you again as well.
Good to be here.
It worked out that our entire show is going to be on tape today, so we are not taking calls live, but we do still love hearing what you think about what we've been talking about. So email us. talk@21stshow.org is the address. talk@21stshow.org. All right, Sean, I want to begin with you. And there was a brutal attack on a police officer in Springfield recently. This was a state trooper who stopped a driver on the south side of town, actually not far from the University of Illinois Springfield. What happened there?
Yeah, Brian, it happened on the south end of Springfield. For people that are familiar with it, it's Toronto Road. It's an exit, one of the first exits you would get if you're coming up from the south going to Springfield. And this trooper made the stop of this car. It was around 11 o'clock at night on a weeknight. And when the trooper made the stop, the suspect in the vehicle, who was from Chicago and was actually wanted in a recent homicide that occurred in that city, opened fire on the trooper. There was also a physical altercation. I believe 10 shots were fired. And then also a beating took place in which the trooper suffered facial fractures, a skull fracture, bleeding on the brain, and was hospitalized for several days, just actually released this week, and a long recovery still ahead, of course. But the suspect took off, and it took a couple of hours, but they were finally able to apprehend him. There is video of it. It's quite a violent apprehension as well. Was struck by one of the vehicles. And then this person, who is 37-year-old Cristobal Santana, the suspect, as I mentioned, was wanted for a homicide in Chicago, now faces attempted murder charges here in the Springfield area as well. So again, the good news for the trooper, out of the hospital and a long recovery ahead.
Yeah, and the trooper, Dakota Chapman Green, it is a terrible video. The police released both dashboard camera video as well as surveillance video from a nearby apartment complex. What do you make of them actually putting out the video? We don't get to see this sort of thing that often.
Yeah, I guess this is becoming more of what law enforcement is doing to be a little more open about this. But certainly, this was a very violent police stop and, of course, the incident that ensued. But it was also a violent, as I mentioned, apprehension of this suspect who actually, if you watch the video, and, you know, I won't describe it all, but basically was struck by another car. And yeah, I think they, you know, from what I have been told, it was basically to be upfront about what did take place and to make sure the public had all the information.
Yeah. Yeah. Best luck for a good recovery for that trooper. Jane, I wanted to turn to you now. I guess this is a somewhat related vein. There was a woman charged with murdering the police chief in Maquon, Illinois. Her charges were dismissed. Now the case is back on. What's the story there?
Well, it starts back in the fall of last year when human remains were discovered in a storage unit in Maquon, which is a village of about 200 people in Knox County. And the defendant, Marcy Oglesby, was initially charged with concealment of death. The remains were not able to be identified for months due to, you know, several issues there. And about 4 months after those initial charges, as the investigation advanced, Oglesby was charged with murder and aggravated battery with a toxic substance. She had allegedly poisoned the village's former police chief with eye drops and other medication. But then a judge, the month after that, granted a defense motion to dismiss these charges because they said it violated her right to a speedy trial. The amended charges did. And then that went to the appellate court. And just this week, the appellate court's decision came back and said the court erred in dismissing the murder charges. So Marcy Oglesby is again charged with murder.
And that case is going to be back on. Interesting. We'll continue to follow that over time. Jane, I want to turn now to a story about the culture wars, I guess, coming to Galesburg. I saw the city has now adopted a flag ordinance limiting what flags can be flown on city property. What's behind that?
Galesburg had flown pride flags at City Hall every year since 2020. A former mayor had started that. There hadn't been any issues until this year. There was an election this year. And then after council members were sworn in and Pride Month was coming up, they decided that they didn't want to fly pride flags this year without a flag ordinance in place. And the argument there outwardly was, this is a slippery slope kind of thing. And if we allow pride flags to fly, then, a Satanist club could come and want their flag to fly at City Hall too, which legal counsel kind of said that wasn't the case. Pride flags did end up flying. There was still this intent to get a flag ordinance on the books. But then in October, before it was, a majority of the council then voted to fly a pro-life flag at City Hall. And now the flag ordinance has been approved. It was approved on a 6-1 vote, and only military, government, and POW MIA flags can fly at City Hall.
Interesting. And this is something we've seen in other communities. I mean, so this was conservatives, I guess, objecting to a pride flag. We've also seen the, people who are on the other side of the political spectrum objecting to police departments flying those thin blue line or back the blue or whatever you want to call
those.
That
happened here, too.
It did. Okay. Yeah.
Previously.
So interesting fight. Now it's just going to be, like you said, government, military, or POW MIA flags on city.
And that also includes, uniforms and city-owned vehicles.
Interesting. Sean, one of the reasons we can talk about stories like the one Jane covered there are because of reporters keeping tabs on local governments, school, police departments, and so on. But I know in Springfield, as in so many downstate communities, there are dozens fewer reporters covering the city than there were even a decade ago, certainly two or three decades ago. And that brings me to a new philanthropic effort to boost news coverage in Springfield. What's that about?
Well, this is something, a national effort that's been put together by a lot of different fundraisers throughout the country called Press Forward. And what they're going to do, at least to start out, is have six chapters. And incidentally, Springfield is one of those. I mean, we're talking Chicago, Philadelphia, Wichita, Alaska, Minnesota, and here in Springfield. So it seems kind of interesting that Springfield was chosen. And one of the reasons it was the Community Foundation that operates out of Springfield received quite a big gift after the death of the former State Journal Register, the local newspaper here's publisher, Patrick Coburn, left $1 million. And they've put it to use in trying to boost local news coverage. Now, how that's going to be done is a little unclear. The MacArthur Foundation has matched Coburn's gift, but it's going to be treated as an endowment. So what that means is the principal will stay and the earnings off of it is what will go out in grants. We're probably still talking a year and a half to 2 years away. But how that money will be spent, in what ways, we're not really sure. And nobody seems to know quite yet, because they're going to put a committee together and try to come up with some different ideas for this. But the goal behind it is to try to boost that coverage, which we have seen decline, and across the board in any medium you talk about. And of course, in many of these more rural areas, we're seeing local newspapers, weeklies in some cases, those have folded as well. So people are needing more information. They're not getting it. And this might be one way to help with that. So it'll be an interesting project, and we'll see what happens as it gets off the ground.
Well, Sean, still a lot of questions remain, because like you say, $2 million in principal, even at current interest rates, I don't know that that's even enough to fund one reporter, let alone an entire news operation like a block club Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, they basically said it would be they're looking at roughly maybe anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 at the start, at least. Now, they're hoping to raise more money, and that could, that amount could go up, certainly. But where they're at this point and just getting started with it, and as I mentioned, we're probably looking at 2025 at the earliest before a grant would go out. How it's administered, who's in charge of it, what type of news we're talking about, what type of coverage, all of that remains to be answered.
Interesting. Something we will continue to watch. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are doing our Friday local news roundup, talking with Sean Crawford from NPR Illinois, WUIS-FM in Springfield, and Jane Carlson with Tri-State's public radio about Galesburg. Their stations include WIUM-FM in Macomb and over all of Western Illinois. Jane, you recently covered the end of a six-year project in Galesburg, an underground effort, you might say, to upgrade the city's water infrastructure. What's the story there?
Well, Galesburg no longer has any lead water service lines. The work was done in phases, six phases, about 500 each year, and all that was funded by forgivable loans from the Illinois IPA. And this was pretty exciting for Galesburg because going back to 2015, there were concerns about the water. Some tests showed higher lead levels in Galesburg water than what the federal government considered safe. And fast forward to 2023, and all of those service lines have been replaced.
And certainly we hope to see some long-term health benefits from that, because lead in the water, not good, especially for kids, especially for kids. Sean, just about 5 minutes left in our time together. I wanted to ask you about a push among some of our U.S. senators at expanding a national park site in downtown Springfield. This is the Lincoln Home Historic Site. I'm sure many people who have visited Springfield, it's one of the top tourist destinations here. What's happening there?
Well, people may not realize it because a lot of the Lincoln sites are state-run, but the Lincoln Home site is actually a National Park Service operated a location there. They keep it up. They do the tours, all of that.
You got the people with the Smokey Bear hats on.
Exactly. And there are some efforts underway here, and this has been tried for a couple of years, hasn't gone anywhere quite yet, but this is Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, the U.S. senators, are pushing this. There's an effort underway to create a Lincoln Cottage, which is the home before it was expanded. Many may not realize as well that the Lincoln home used to be about half the size as it is now. And so they want to create this Lincoln Cottage to show what life was like for Lincoln when they first moved in and for the first 12 years they lived there. And then also a home which is the oldest in Springfield. It's been moved to near the Lincoln home site, and it is called the Elijah Isles House. That house would also be included in a National Park Service footprint that would expand a little bit. And the reason this has to go through the federal government is, as I mentioned, the National Park Service oversees it. So if you're going to give them more space and more property to oversee, you're going to have to get some approval from the feds.
Yeah, that Elijah Isles house is an interesting story. I remember when they were literally moving the house across Springfield. And of course, Isles is one of the founding fathers here, the sort of Jedediah Springfield of the actual Springfield in Illinois. Jane, speaking of historic sites, Galesburg recently saw the addition of some markers dedicated to what were known as boxcar families. Who were they?
Yes, there were four boxcar camps in Galesburg in the first half of the 20th century, and they were Mexican immigrants and their families who came to build the railroad, more or less, but lived in boxcars on railroad property. So the city now has four markers at the sites of those camps that have been dedicated to the struggles that these families went through and the contributions. Galesburg is a railroad town and wouldn't be a railroad town had these immigrant families not made those sacrifices.
And you actually included a voice in one of your stories from somebody who actually grew up and was born in one of these.
There was a ceremony, and you know, people are talking at the ceremony, and I saw this guy smiling, and I went up and talked to him. His name was Juan Medina. I found out he was born in one of the camps, lived there until he was 15. You know, he had tears in his eyes while I was talking to him, because those markers really mean something to those immigrants and their descendants.
Amazing story. All right, Sean, I think this will probably be our last topic today, and this is definitely on the lighter side of things, literally, but there is a state senator in Springfield who sponsored legislation that would, let me check my notes here, yes, increase funding for pickleball courts in public parks. And I noticed that she's a Democrat, the Republican state senator also signed on as a co-sponsor. I guess you take your opportunities for bipartisanship where you can find them in 2023, but what's the story there?
Pickleball bringing us all together, apparently. And it's Senator Doris Turner, the Democrat from Springfield, who has introduced this. And it is funding for about doubling of the number of pickleball courts at a couple of parks in the city. She also thinks it's going to bring a boost economically to the city because some people will come in and play. Maybe they could have tournaments here, things of that nature. From what I've been told, I don't play pickleball. I've been told, of course, that it's growing quite exponentially. And then also the fact that many cases, people are having difficulty getting court times. So that's a little bit of what this is all about. There are currently 15 pickleball courts in Springfield. And as I said, it would pretty much double that if this legislation is approved, this funding request.
Yeah, and there's also some private pickleball courts coming in, supposedly, in Springfield. I do play pickleball in Springfield, and it can be hard to get a court. So I am verifying your story in real time. Sean Crawford with NPR, Illinois, WUIS, FM in Springfield, and Jane Carlson with Tri-State's Public Radio. Great to talk with you again. Thank you for making the time for us here on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, we'll be talking about national and state politics. The veto session is just wrapped up in Springfield. We'll be talking with our Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon from D.C., and Amanda Vinicky about what's happening here in Illinois. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.